Hey there, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. It's now time to dive deep into an episode-by-episode, character-by-character, song-by-song account of the making of your favorite zip code with your host, Charles Rosen.
Did I say that?
Jeez. Larry Mullen.
This heinous thing about the real person, and we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
It was nice having Darren Star on that one time.
And representing the fans, Lily Amarin.
Ryan, I love you. I have dreamt about you.
What?
Along with many special guests and your questions. So sit back and relax because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Okay, we are here. And we are back for another episode of the Beverly Hills 90210 show. And look who's with us, Rebecca Gayhart, Rebecca Dane. How are you? It's so good to see you. Hey, James Whitmore Jr. is here too. How are you, man? How's everything been? The director of this episode. How are things going with you, man?
Well, you know, working for a living, taking care of my grandkids. My old wife and I have been hanging around together for a long time. We had 5 months off to hang out together with each other and with our kids, and now we're back to work. Life, any better be a setup.
Larry, how are you?
I'm doing great. You know, it's been a very busy week. I have to tell everybody, we've been really working hard, prepping for the October 4th Super Show party, which is the actual premiere date of Beverly Hills 90210 in 1990, and there's just going to be a three-hour live party extravaganza with everybody who's ever once worked on the show hopping in at one point and pre-records, and you know, everyone's being invited. It's a big, you know, it's a milestone. We've got critics, we've got all the different girlfriends of the different characters. We've got interesting fan segments. So we're doing some pre-records and locations, and I don't know why we're doing this, but we're having a lot of fun just going revisiting the work, which is pretty damn good, as we discovered.
Yes, and hey, we announced on Wednesday joining us on that October 4th show will be Carol Potter and James Eckhouse. Jim and Cindy will be with us. And then I'm excited to announce a couple more. Christina Lise is coming back to the fold. And Mark Espinosa. So it's gonna be fun. And obviously, we've got invites out to some people. I mean, I went to the Wayback Machine for a couple of these.
Yes, I know you did. I know
way back. Yeah. So anyway, Rebecca, how are you? It's good to have you.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here. I am well, considering everything that's going on in the world. Hanging in there.
Totally. Now, you probably, I'm sure all of you, when was the last time that you saw some of these episodes?
So a very, very, very long time. It feels like a lifetime ago, and it was really fun to revisit them. My daughters wanted to watch. They're not quite old enough to watch, so I didn't let them. But it was hard to keep them away.
Yeah. Well, we have a little surprise here for the fans. Somebody is waiting in the wings to join us. I don't think we could have done this episode without him. But there we have Cliff Weissman.
Hey, everybody. Hey, how you doing?
Hey. He is with us as well.
Awesome. He played Bruno, which was our Father Lawrence character. Like, if you know,
I brought my tie. I don't know if you could see that.
Every episode. Yeah, wardrobe's still looking for that tie.
Is that right?
we're actually still looking for wardrobe because she's supposed to join us and we haven't heard from her. So Molly Campbell, who made the dress and stuff, might join us as well. All right, Larry, let's go. Let's get into this. Let's dive into this. Now, coming into season 6. Mm. There's a debacle. Is Luke Perry going to stay on with the show? Right. There's that. Now, how involved are you with something like that? Are you like, guys, you got to sign him? Or are you just if we do this, this happens. If we don't, like, where do you go as a writer?
I would say timeline wise, we know we're going back in production in the middle of July, and which means we really have to start writing scripts by Memorial Day. So the beginning of May, we started hearing that Luke wasn't going to come back. No, we already had lost Chuck. You know, Shannon had gone the year before. So now, okay, and then he was going to do 10 episodes. So we got that message, 10 episodes. And it was an awesome responsibility. And so we tried to you know, basically a lot of the success of the show was we always would look backward, what these characters, because they were real to us, what these characters, and we had this great, inherited this great gift of the mystery of the death of Luke's father, which of course James Whitmore blew him up in a car in another episode, I think. But so we, and in the end of season five, we had hung Luke out of the tram, you know, for checking out what's going on, who's after, you know, who did his father in, and trying to scare him off. And we said, okay, what if he didn't get scared off? What if he could get some real solid clue? And then we just started weaving this love story, and you know, and we just got more and more into it. It was basically in the room where it happened was really Steve Wasserman, Jessica Klein, and myself. And we started weaving. We thought, you know, you're kind of always looking a little bit at Romeo and Juliet as the shorthand. And in the shorthand, Bruno was Father Lawrence, who was the go-between between the lovers. We always had that in the pocket. We were going to have some way to make this story work. And my background also was a lot of cop shows, so, you know, like Jim's and a lot of action shows. So I kind of felt a little, you know, I felt pretty good about we could make this work. And then we had the casting, which, you know, we were so lucky. What can I say? I mean, our hearts were in our throats when we thought Rebecca was going to say yes. I mean, we were so excited because we just knew everyone would fall in love with her. And certainly Luke was going to find Dylan McKay was going to fall in love with her. And sure, that was the key thing, making this work. And then we were lucky because we had we cast Stanley Cammell as the father.
Yes.
The other Tony. See, that was the other thing we played it with. We, you know, late at night, we realized, oh, we have Tony and Antonia. You know, we could kind of, because we had to delay it 10 episodes. And she did, Rebecca did 8 episodes, I think. So we had to make that story go 8 episodes. And then, you know, like I said, we had Stanley Cammell, who comes in and is just so evil. He's just so bad. And watching this particular episode, there's such a scene where Bruno, you really see what he's like. He's so happy about these kids getting married. And he says to the hitman, isn't this great? The boss is turning around. He's going to give him a job. You know, and like these, oh, it's just played beautifully. I mean, you know, the storyline was the storyline. We kind of felt we had gold, but it was the casting. And then we had to get James Whitmore to direct it. And then we kind of felt, you know, we'd give it our best shot. And it just, looking at it again, it's something I really feel proud of. And you know, I should mention Steve Wasserman, our partner in crime, who penned the teleplay and also did a lot of the producing, I'm sure, with Jim on it, is no longer with us. Either is Stanley Cammell in this, you know, memorial of shows.
Now, I'm curious for Rebecca, how did you guys, how did you get into the mix of this?
I was still living in New York City, and I got a call from Larry Taub, who was my agent and who also happened to be Luke's agent. Oh. Yeah, and he said, I want you to get on the phone with Luke, because we want you to go out to California and do this show, 90210. Obviously, I knew what the show was, and I was like, wow, okay. I hadn't worked in California a lot. I was sort of an East Coast person. And, you know, listen, after speaking with Luke, you can't say no to him.
Right.
I was so excited. I was like, yes, yes, yes.
That's awesome. So you didn't...
I never knew that part of it. That's great. I mean, that was thank you, Luke.
Yeah, but there was no audition process for you. And
there was an offer.
No, you know, it was wild because, you know, I don't know how much work I'd done before the show. Some, but I certainly was not, you know, someone who got offered roles all the time.
Are you kidding? You were the Noxzema girl.
I was going to say she was, and that's what she was known as. And, but we had also cast a lot of models. We were comfortable with models. Mr. Spelling was comfortable with models. Oddly enough, and I should tell Rebecca this, one of the things that he was concerned about was the curly hair. He was like fixated on it.
So
a rich man would never have his daughter have curly hair. I mean, going like, what are you talking about? We didn't quite, you know, I don't know. It's a generational thing, but you know, it all works out.
Yes, definitely.
My hair scared everyone.
It was fabulous.
I loved your hair.
My hair was a lot, and it was scary for a lot of people. But I think for that time period, it was very in the 90s. You know.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
So it worked, but I think also, you know, I don't know. It all happened very fast. I was cast. I came out and, you know, for me, it was a big deal to drive in California. And you guys were very kind and put me up at this great hotel. And I had this convertible car you had rented me. But the sad part about that was, because I was enjoying it all so much, that after I burnt my foot, remember that episode? Where
I do. I remember what a trooper you were. She finished the day.
And I wore a boot for many of the episodes. I couldn't drive after that. So
that what is the story of burning your foot? What is that story of her burning her foot?
You know, we were shooting in Point Magoo, and it was a beach scene, and it was like a 6 a.m. call time, and they had put my mark on, I guess it was a campfire that had someone had just covered with a very small layer of sand, and my mark was right on the campfire. And so I was running with down the beach to hit my mark, and I hit my mark, dug my foot into the campfire.
Oof.
Yeah.
Welcome to 90210.
She finished the day. Okay. Right. I remember us going, what a trooper this kid. I mean, we were so, felt so terrible. I mean, obviously we were really mad that this would happen, that they didn't figure this out. But God bless them. Yeah, it was, you were tough as nails. Well, she was from Hazard, Kentucky, we found out that day.
That's right, yeah.
This girl's from Hazard, Kentucky. She's tough.
Did you know, right, Rebecca, that like this is Luke's last year and this is a big deal for, you know, for you to be in this storyline with him? Were you aware of that at that time?
I mean, a little bit. I think, you know, look, I was excited about it, and I knew it was going to be fun to be on the show. It was a little scary, you know, first day of school on that show, because everyone, it was such a, you know, close cast. And but I didn't know it was going to be such a big deal. You know, I thought it was going to be one of those, you know, you go, you guest star on a show, and then what. But it's funny because people think that I was on the show for much longer than I was. Because in reality, I think it was 8 or 9 episodes, and people, you know, think I'm on the show for a year or 2 years.
Right, that's true.
So, well, it's impactful.
I was just going to say it's an impactful period. Now, talk to me a little bit about the storyline, Larry, from this season of her coming in and whatnot, and some of the beats that you know, because we do see her, I think in episode 3 of that season, right?
Yes, it must be a guy thing. She comes in that episode, number 3. And, you know, there's a curious thing. I just, it's a side note here. I don't mean to. But I was confused because there were 2 episodes played on the same day, okay? The first 2 episodes of that season, Home is Where the Card Is and Buffalo Girls, played 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock on Fox that week. Because at 9 o'clock on CBS, Darren Star's show was premiering. And Mr. Stelling was fixated on burning it. And so we had to hurry up another post on another show so we could run 2 and kind of burn it. And which he did. He successfully killed the show. It was called Central Park West.
Wow.
Okay. Anyway, you know, within the beats of the story, we were going to have, you know, Luke, you know, make his entrance with the girl, but not really thinking about falling in love with her. He's using her basically to get to the father. And, you know, she starts getting involved with him, getting involved with the friends. And there's a wonderful dinner party scene I saw. And you know, it's just as great. And of course, Luke is using it, Dylan's using it to kind of sneak into the father's office to get some, you know, incriminating evidence. And I think, you know, Bruno is also up there. I don't know if you got to see that clip, but yeah, there's some great stuff building up the relationships. And it all just kept working on. I mean, and we, you know, we played some heavy stuff too with the guys with guns at each other under the table and a dinner scene. You know, we kind of, you know, kind of pulled out some of the stuff and really built it up. And then we knew we were going to be going to this episode, which is going to be Goodbye Luke. And we just wanted to break heart. And luckily Jim had the time to do this episode. Because we needed someone like him to pull this off. I mean, there was rain, there was a party. We have strippers, male strippers. I mean, there's so much going on here. Again, as Jim knows, we did these in 7 out of 10 days. What do you shoot now, Jim? How many days do you shoot an hour?
Well, at least you do 8, and probably 2 or 3 second unit days now.
Right. Yeah.
It's a different world.
Different world. He had to shoot like 8 pages a day. It was like.
And for Rebecca, like walking through these before we get to this episode, walking through this storyline with Luke and whatnot, and entering the cast and all that. What is some of that stuff like for you?
I was very intimidated by it all and by everyone, but I also, really was kind of naive about it all. So that worked to my advantage. I just sort of came and tried to do my job. I was very excited about it. And I really remember Cliff, we had such a nice time shooting together, and
yes,
you were one of my favorite parts of that storyline. It was definitely, intimidating to have as scenes with Jenny and Tori, and to meet them and then the next second be in a scene with them. They were all sort of very well known from the show, and then Jason, and it was just trying to find my footing, trying to find my place. And I have to say, Luke played a really big part in making me comfortable on set. Everyone did. The crew was also incredibly kind to me, and they were looking out for me because not everyone was happy I was there. There was definitely some
Hollywood
dynamics on the set. Yeah. But everyone, I felt very comfortable because there was people watching out for me. Like I said, I think Cliff, you probably felt similar in
well, we used to chat, actually. We used to talk a little bit about it, about feeling outside.
Mm.
Yeah.
Initially.
It was the sixth season there, and people, people were leaving, Luke's leaving, everyone who's staying is saying, why am I staying? I mean, it was starting to, there's a rhythm that happens in a long running show, and this was one of those, down rhythms, but the storylines were buoying everybody up, because they were excited.
No, I was only going to add that I felt like the storyline, though, that you guys created, it was magical in a way, it all happened sort of quickly, but it was played so well, and you guys really, did such a nice job with it that it was just so much fun. It was short and sweet, but it was so much fun, and it was really impactful.
Awesome. So for Cliff, how did you walk into this? Did you audition for the part of Bruno?
I auditioned. I was still relatively new to LA, and I had just switched representation, and it was my first audition. And I had a preliminary audition. I had a second callback. And then the third callback, it was just me and someone else. And I was supposed to go into the room first. And the other actor was invited in. And when he came out of the room, I had noticed that he had sort of flop sweat. And I thought to myself, huh, I could possibly get this.
It's a tell.
And so I did. And I auditioned for it. And we did several scenes from several episodes when I auditioned for the final time.
And what do you think of the scripts when you're getting them and the character of Bruno? What did you think of the part?
Well, I love Bruno because, oftentimes I play tough guys, and this was really a guy with a heart of gold. And so ultimately, you start out and he's sort of brutish and he's, sort of antagonistic. And then I had some wonderful scenes, particularly with Rebecca, where I got to show my sense of humor and I got to do some lighthearted stuff. We did a Halloween episode where I was holding a cat, and that was my tribute to Brando. It was a great character, really great character. So I was thrilled.
So when we get into this episode of the One Wedding and a Funeral, let's talk about that. For Jim, I guess, you get this script, and there's a lot of moving parts in something like this. What is your thoughts on getting that script and seeing this murder scene and this party and a wedding? I mean, they really threw everything at you at one time, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a very, very interesting company. Those guys, they're a bunch of kids. I had a few opportunities over the years to work with, I worked with the 21 Jump Street guys. I worked with the 90210 guys. I ended up working with the Dawson's Creek guys. I got to work with a lot of young actors starting their careers. And it was a very good thing to be able to do, to open up an environment where they were safe and they could explore and they could do their thing. They could be free. And this group was, they were all pissed off. I mean, And the first thing an actor does is pray for a job. And then as soon as he gets it, he says, what the hell am I doing this crap for? I should be doing something better. But the reality is those guys were, they really had stepped into a gold mine there. I mean, I remember when I started working on that show, there were paparazzi guys across the street on Calvert Street hiding in the sauna store, taking pictures with long lenses of all these kids, you know? I mean, it was, they were like the Beatles. They were on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, Luke and Jason, those guys, you know?
Yeah.
So they, on one hand, they hated it, but Luke was an actor. You know, right. he was an actor. He loved to act, and he wanted. And this was what a great story to tell. I mean, to fall in love with the when I got to that show with these two guys, they were so in sync, Rebecca and Luke, that it was real. There was a wonderful, real thing going on to photograph, and you knew it was going to break everybody's heart. And then they did. They let me go out to Malibu and shoot at a beautiful mansion on the beach. I mean, it was one thing after another. Stanley Kimmel, old friend of mine, one of the great actors that lived in Hollywood, you know, and sad to say he died, you know, very, very young, but what a wonderful actor. And you say he was a great bad guy. He was a wonderful actor. He could do anything, that guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were so many elements that were wonderful in that. You know, Rick Gunter, the cameraman, was so game on that one. We got the long lenses going. We got out in that cemetery and we shot such beautiful stuff at the funeral. I mean, when I watched the show the other day, when it started, I went, what in the hell is going on here? I didn't remember. Mm. And then as I started getting into it, I remembered it very vividly. I remember these two guys working together. I remember, you know, all the stuff in the house and Luke and Rebecca and how they worked. And by the way, Rebecca, your work was extraordinary. And you know, you may have been a model, but you were a brilliant, wonderful, natural actress. And I remember not working with you, but coming on a show soon after that, Dead Like Me, that you did the pilot for? Another wonderful TV show that we worked on. It was just a bunch of people who really cared. And I think you're right, Larry.
That was the
material was so compelling to these guys. It was really something to do other than, you know, like do the twist and comb your hair. They were actually alive in this story. And it was quite beautiful. And for me, it was a thrill. You know, I'm a journeyman director. I go around and shoot film for guys. And a lot of it is just, you know, it's pap. That show had some extraordinary currents of reality and passion and love. And it was a joy to do. I mean, it's a love story. Who the hell doesn't want to make a love story, you know? A tragic love story. It was a gift. It was a gift to do. I was happy.
Rebecca, for you, what was it like working with Stanley? We just talked about him a little bit.
I agree. He was such a wonderful actor. And he was such a, he was a wonderful person. I loved hanging out with him. We had so many great conversations and he was so supportive of me. You know, he would sort of critique my work for me. You know, I asked him to keep an eye out. And so he was giving me lots of positive reinforcement and it was great. I mean, he was a lovely guy, gone too soon for sure. You know, I felt so, it was just such a great experience because of Stanley and Luke and Cliff and the crew. And it was really special. It was.
How about for you, Cliff, working with Stanley?
Again, I was really new to L.A., and Stanley was a veteran actor. And so I would talk to him a lot about career. I would talk to him a little bit about acting. So, you know, he was a bit of a mentor, certainly in our scenes together. And I remember one time in particular, I was, you know, working on having some emotion, and Stanley was watching me and sort of helping me to sort of modulate that. So he was very helpful.
That's good to hear. Larry,
I wanted to say one thing before he asked me. You know, I was thinking when James was talking, I think, and also Rebecca, I think one of the things also was special about this storyline is all the actors who loved Luke themselves wanted his getaway to be as great as it could make it. So everyone bought into this story and everyone played it hard.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And, you know, some of that is evident. I mean, like, this is one of those things where we've seen people leave the show later on, you know, but everybody is still pretty present in this. We have everybody at the wedding. All the main characters are there. The core that was there outside of Gabrielle is there for this, for the participation of this wedding. This is where I would ask Molly Campbell, by the way, about the beautiful dress and whatnot.
Oh, I know.
Do you guys remember the day we shot the wedding? There was a very funny photo that was taken by the helicopter paparazzi.
That's right.
The whole cast is there. And the crew, and we all just stand there and look up and give them a
yeah. That was a great one. They really were bothering everybody. That show, well, obviously that was the highest, I think it was the highest single rated episode as it came out. There was such anticipation for it, and it delivered, which is always a wonderful thing. I wanted to say one thing to you, Jim. I don't know if you knew, but Rick Gunther also died.
I know, bro. Nothing. I know very well. He was a great guy. What a pleasure to work with. When we went down to Mexico together, I told him some of the stories about some of my adventures in Mexico, and his face got very, very quiet. He didn't know what the hell to say about me.
Jim, were you on the location scout when we did the hazardous to your... You must have been on the... Well, we almost went down in Duke's plane.
Yes.
The Cabo ship.
Yeah, Duke.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We almost went down. That was bad.
Cabo, where Duke hung out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Rebecca, let's talk about the wedding scene itself. What do you remember about shooting the wedding?
I remember that we were sort of writing our own vows to one another. Do you remember that? There was a script that was given to us, and then I think Luke was like, "Okay, we have this, but let's also write our own vows to each other." And I can't really recall what was used in the show, if it was what was written or what we sort of said to each other. And that was kind of frightening to do. but
I think Steve was on the set that day.
It was such a day, you know, that was, and I don't know, I have nothing but fond memories of shooting the wedding.
Yeah, for Larry, as a wedding is a big deal, right? It's a big.
Well, you're trying not to have more than one a season. You're trying not to have one a season because you want to have a death and a wedding. You know, we're shooting all our bullets in one episode, really. Because we had 32 to do, as Jim and everybody knows. The other thing I'd forgotten watching this thing too, we should really give the cat was fantastic. And I'll tell you something, watching that scene after the unmentionable time and when the cat finally comes in and stuff. And I remember when we were going through the beats and writing the story here, and we were all crying in the room. So we kind of felt we had everybody. But Luke, I mean, what he does in that scene and what Jim captures and what he got from him there. I cried three times during the show. I hadn't seen it in 25 years, but.
Well, let's talk about this. We're going to have to all get through this together, this scene.
What the hell?
We got through it. We got through it. She's here. She's okay. Rebecca, what do you remember about shooting all of that?
Bye. Oh, gosh, it was just a lot. And, for Luke, it was such a big thing. It was such a big scene for Luke that I think we all tried to just give him his to do his thing and go there. And, there was rain in the car and the music that was used in that scene was great. I remember it very vividly. And I remember Jason being there and just sort of, we all just sort of stood back and let Luke sort of do what he needed to do, because that was, you know, I think what was needed, you know, for that scene. But it was really emotional. It was really sad. I mean, I don't know how you watch that and not sort of feel emotions.
God.
What do you guys remember from that night?
I can't get through it. Hey, Jim, for you, though, that's a pretty heavy scene. Luke has got a lot to do there. What is your memory of that?
Well, you know, it wasn't a thing that they did with Spelling did all the time. It wasn't like, you know, I worked, Paul Wagner was the producer on that show, and I'd say, Paul, what about a little fire? And you say, no. What about a little rain? No, you can't. You couldn't do anything on the show. So now we had rain, we had car gags, we had machine gun fire and squibs. I mean, this is pretty unusual stuff for Beverly Hills 90210. So it was sort of stressful, but it was so much fun to shoot, because all the actors wanted to do it. Everybody wanted to be involved. And the camera, you know, if you notice the high shot, we really didn't know how to do a high shot, a crane shot in the rain, because the rain's dripping off the mat box. And we didn't have a deflector. We just didn't, those guys weren't doing that kind of stuff. But they went for it, and I think it's very powerful. It's beautifully done. And Luke just wanted to go. He wanted to go. He wanted to act. He wanted to do tell this story. He, you know, he was an artist. He really, really wanted to act. He wanted to sing, and he went for it in that show. He was beautiful. He was beautiful. He was a great guy. Luke Perry was a hell of a guy.
Yeah, he was. One thing I remember is they kept telling me to pull I had my hood on. Yeah. So that you couldn't see my entire face, and I had to keep pulling the hood, you know, to hide my face, so it would make sense that the mistake was made, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That was.
The yeah, they had to think it was Luke.
The rain and everything helped with that. You know, it people bought it. No problem.
Yeah.
Larry, you wrote the rain into this, obviously.
Yeah, well, yeah, because again, we were trying to help, you know, confuse the gunman as much. You know, you have to make it look real. I mean, so yeah, all that stuff was helpful. And again, Paul Wagner did come. You know, we started getting bigger and bigger in the show, as you know, Jim knows. You remember you acted also in the Western that Jason directed. That those guys also twisted your arm to be in, and you add so much authenticity to it. It really, we actually had a show with Jason, and we talked about that. We talked about talking you into the show. But yeah, that was, we wanted to make the show big again. We all felt this great responsibility to send that character off. And, you know, when he rides down that road with the little cat there, trouble, and, you know, it's just, we were obviously hoping he'd come back down the road the other way, but he didn't for a long time.
Cliff, for you, you play a pivotal part in the phone call, right? You know, you get the call, and you know, you think that Stanley's character is having a change of heart.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on some of the things that you had to do in those scenes? Because I think the way you delivered that, I think it brings that anticipation of, oh God, I hope nothing is going to happen here, leading up to it. So, what's your thoughts on those scenes?
I basically was just doing my job. I know that sounds like a strange thing, but I felt like I had to serve the plot as best I could. And so I thought, as far as my acting was concerned, you know, I went back. I hadn't seen it in 20 years or so. I was like, wow, that's really clean and really, you know, it just communicated, you know, the conflict within the character and you know, that he was very concerned for Antonia, and he had to do something and felt powerless.
Well, he risked everything also. He basically risks everything by doing it. He could be killed himself.
Yeah. So, I remember, again, you know, particularly talking to the first AD about how to do the shot and so forth. And, you know, it was all relatively new to me. And I remember that particular scene, I was asking about my shot and, you know, how we were going to do it and so forth. So it was a learning curve. But nonetheless, I just felt like I was just doing my job. I had to, you know, hit the notes.
In 2020, Bruno just shoots her a text. Hey, your dad.
Oh, yeah, we're saved by that.
He said, how did Bruno know the Peach Pit number, which was something that people have commented on?
The yellow pages, the yellow 411. Pages.
Yeah.
411.
Hey, your dad is about to try to kill your boyfriend, your new husband. Watch out.
OMG
for now. Right.
No, I mean, that made everything harder once, you know, cell phones happened and, you know, storytelling and this cop stuff was a lot harder.
Yeah. I think one of the other most beautiful scenes in this episode prior to the what we just watched is, you know, there's that really beautiful scene that Rebecca, you have with Luke, I guess the wedding night, right? You guys have that beautiful dance and
love, very love
powerful,
it.
Powerful scene. Do you remember
great
doing
music
that?
In that show? You guys yes. had great music in that show.
That was Lyle Lovett's Nobody Knows Me But My Baby. And that was the second choice we had for the show. The first choice was Chris Isaac, Somebody's Crying. And we couldn't license it, so we went with the other one. And it's so perfect. It's great.
It's actually better. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it worked out the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, it works so great. And the dance is beautiful. And Jim, I want to commend you. You didn't use too many candles.
But Rebecca,
everyone knows I have a thing about candles and directors. I make fun of it all the time. But you use just the proper amount of candles, I find.
Do you remember doing that scene, the little dance there before the, you know, after the wedding and all that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I remember him carrying me in. You know, we tried to just keep it as real as possible and tender. And again, just, yeah, tell the story. You know, but listen, it was obvious Luke and I had really easy, great chemistry. So those scenes were fairly easy for us, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely comes through. And then obviously, you know, we get the funeral aspect of this, which you're not in, Rebecca.
No.
But what do you recall about shooting the funeral, Jim?
Well, I like I say, we were at a beautiful, lovely spot. You know, cemeteries are often very, very lovely places to shoot because of all the dapple light and the trees and stuff. And we had all these, you know, another thing about that show, Larry, is that you had some beautiful human beings in that show. I mean, those faces were just extraordinary, and they were all quite powerful. You know, Jenny Garth, at that point, had become a European actress. I mean, she was so full, and so there was so much going on in her, and they're all the same way. And we got back with nice long lenses, which we didn't do a lot of with Spelling. It wasn't what we did in those days, getting back nice long lenses and softening the frame. And they were, and Luke was so there, and Stanley was so there. I mean, there was such a gravitas about what everybody was doing. You just put the lens on them and play some bitchin' music, and it was fantastic. I mean, it really worked. And I watched it the other night. That was 30 years ago. I can't remember anything about it until I'm watching it, and I'm crying too, like a schmuck. it was wonderful, you know. And what I remember is that everybody was doing it, brother. I mean, they were there. You could do a 90210 and have a lot of guys saying, "Hey, when are we going to get out of here? I got to go to the golf course or something." And that was not one of those shows. That they were never doing that. They wanted to be there, and they wanted to full. And I think you're right, Larry. They wanted to say adios to Luke.
Exactly. Yeah, that was definitely it, because after he left, there was a big slump, actually. Not a slump, but just we had to pick it up again and stuff there. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's tough to keep a bunch of guys interested, man.
Do you remember the day that we shot the funeral scene? You know, I went into the makeup trailer, and Luke was there. And usually he and I would share some banter, we'd talk, and I could see he was already in the moment. He was already preparing for what was coming up. And I was like, wow, you know, it was really, really amazing. And so I think he inspired everybody around him. But I just remember very distinctly that morning, just looking over at him and seeing him. And he was just preparing himself for the day. It was pretty cool.
I mean, it's been amazing for us. We've had a lot of guest stars. We've done like 30 shows, and everyone has a similar story. Like when I came on the set, it was intimidating. There's, you know, there's a little bit of a mean girl factor, and the kids at school and you're not in it. And Luke was the guy who would take a moment and says, "Hey, don't let the bitches get to you. Don't let this happen." And he would take him in. It sucks.
Yeah. For Rebecca, I'm curious, you know, you said that before we came on, you said that you got to see him in a movie that you were in recently, you know.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so what are your memories of Luke, the storyline, and, you know, having seen him again?
You know, listen, we stayed in touch over the years. You know, he came to see my Broadway performance when he was in New York. I would visit him. And, you know, we definitely had a friendship and we stayed in touch throughout the years. But it had been about a year since I'd seen him. And then we got to see each other one last time. It was during we crossed paths at a wardrobe fitting because, like I said, we had no scenes together in the movie, and I, you know, I'm in the movie very little. So it was, you know, I think meant to be that I got to see him one last time before his passing. And, you know, it was the same Luke, the same amazing, loving, kind, funny, crazy Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of nice things about him through here.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Pete, I was thinking, you know, this in some part of the storytelling too, I don't want to leave out is, you know, how the marriage of Luke to Tony was going to affect everyone else, namely the Jenny Garth character, Kelly Taylor, because we start the picture off with that. And, you know, she's okay with it. And she seemed genuine in her scenes with Rebecca, and the girls really embraced him. And I think, again, even the character's love of Dylan was translated. It was all the same thing. And the only one, and I saw a comment before, and I wasn't quite sure why we did this, but Valerie does not go to the bachelorette party.
Right.
And I think the thinking was that she was the only one who really, you know, was really couldn't get behind it because she still loved Dylan herself. In fact, that's the only thing I could think of. If it wasn't double ups, then there had to be a real reason that she just couldn't. It was a bridge too far for her to see that Dylan was going to marry someone else. The other thing we did, which we were very good at, we gave life to the Brenda character off screen. There's a telegram from Brenda. Yeah, we kept throwing that rope out there. You know, it's going to happen eventually if we keep throwing it out there. Yeah. I was very proud we did that because, again, it honors the fans who love these characters as much as we do. And so you get like an equity of if you watch the show a long time, you get to appreciate things more. Mm. You know, sort of.
Yeah.
Did you get to work much with Tiffany, Rebecca?
No, I did not. And she's, you know, I think I had couple of crossover scenes with her, maybe two,
right,
at most, but not many. Did she come to the part, the house party, the little get together that Tony had? I don't think so.
No, there wasn't much crossover there.
No.
I think maybe there was maybe two short scenes or something. I know I worked with her and that we shot together, but I think it was very little.
And was Kathleen great with you? Were some of them good with you? Tell me about some of them.
Yeah, I mean, Kathleen was lovely from day one. She was very welcoming. And, you know, Tori ended up being lovely. I have to say she did. I think it took some of the other girls a little longer, but you're right. By the end of my stint there, everyone was really great. I think it took some getting used to have a new girl in the hair and makeup trailer, a new girl on set, a new girl working with Dylan, Luke, who
right.
I think they all sort of were vying for his energy, attention, whatever it is. You know, there was definitely energy there that you had to work with. And, you know, there was a couple of days that were rough, but I think after that, everyone was like, oh, okay, she's fine. We accept her.
Yeah.
I don't know what I did to get accepted, but they were okay by the end.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Larry, we see Dylan, you know, drive off, and that's the end of that character. Was that tough for you all, the writers?
Terrible. You know, it's just... you know what I mean? Because that was, first of all, he's a great, fun character to write for, you know, because he also, we were doing a college show. You know, something that occurred to me, and Jim knows, because we shot at colleges. There are no college shows. We're the only college show that was ever successful, as far as I could tell. Watching these shows now, I said, that's a college show. Mm-hmm. But Luke's character, Dylan McKay, was not going to go to college. So we always had that, you know, we were in the junior year, because we tried to keep everything you know, real, you know, like kids, you know, when it was September, it was always September and likewise. So, you know, it was always a problem, but it was never really a problem because we loved writing for him and he was challenging. And also it gave us a chance in the last year or two to kind of run a little bit more of an action plot. You know, we kind of really were able to work off some of his demons. And you know, we got him addicted to drugs. We got him losing his money and running to, you know, so he was an action character for us. I mean, in a lot of ways. And so we lost that. No, there was really no one to replace that after he left. We never really got that. So, I mean, when I left after season 7, there was still hope that eventually that he might come back. But if he didn't, it was perfect the way he left, everyone felt. And, you know, I remember I ran into the president of NBC at the time, which was a competing network. And like he shook my hand and said, "That was an amazing episode you did. That story, like, must have had young kids." Because usually, and I don't know if Rebecca or Jim or Cliff had this, but, you know, I tell this story occasionally. But, you know, after 90210 for me, I would go in for a job interview and people go, what have you been doing? I said, well, I've been executive producing 90210, writing, producing. You go, oh, it's too bad it wasn't a good show.
Nice.
And with the spelling, you know, we had this curse of spelling on us that it was somehow they never watched the show, obviously, because, you know, we were doing some shit, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was the curse of that.
You know, I think
we all made money. What are you going to say?
Yeah, I don't
know. We got paid.
We're all here on the show, you know, on this podcast talking about this stuff from 30 years ago because of how incredible everything was. So a lot of people didn't get it right that you talked to.
Nothing is despised more than success in Hollywood.
Exactly. How can I succeed if my friends don't fail?
Lily's been, you know, scouring some fan questions and whatnot. What do you have for Rebecca, Cliff, Jim, Larry?
So I'll start with one for Rebecca. One of our viewers, Mary B., would like to know. She says that your chemistry with Luke was beyond convincing. I felt so happy for his character to find new love. Did you and Luke practice a lot off screen, or did it all just come together naturally?
That's funny. Well, listen, we did hang out a lot off screen, and that probably helped our performance.
There we go.
Okay. Well, one of our favorite viewers, Lori, wants to know if you had a crush with on anyone in the cast at any point.
Did I?
Yes.
Oh, I definitely had a crush on Luke. Definitely. I mean, listen, I was, you know, I had a boyfriend and he was married, but of course I had a crush on him.
Yes. Awesome. Melinda Berg asks, if you knew how to ride a motorcycle the way you did on the show, or do you now?
Me? The motorcycle? Oh, God. I do not. Okay. That scene's actually quite funny to watch because I cannot ride a motorcycle like that. And I love what I wish I could. I look so cool.
Yeah.
Riding a motorcycle like that. My double totally. Made me look so cool.
Thank God for helmets.
Yeah.
So Chance Bartels wants to know, he asked me to please ask Rebecca to tell a story of working with Luke after 90210 in the miniseries Invasion.
So, yes. So, you know, Luke and I tried to work together as much as possible after 90210, and we did a couple jobs, and Invasion was one of them. And, you know, again, we really had fun working together. We had a really lovely friendship. And, you know, we both loved acting. We loved telling these stories and we had a great time hanging out. So Invasion was the same. You know, we were just a few years older and had a little bit more experience under our belt, but we still had just as much fun on Invasion as we did on 90210. But 90210 is special because that's where it all started.
Totally. Zara Brown wants to know if you received any fan letters during your time on the show, and do you have any fun memories on the set, and are you willing to share some?
Yes, I received lots of fan mail because of this character. Lots of people inquiring about the wedding dress, about Trouble, the cat, about you know, what it was like to kiss Luke. So many things that these people want to know about Luke. Lots of questions about Luke. Obviously, you know, I'm trying to think of stories on set. Really what stands out when I think about shooting 90210 was, you know, just I woke up every morning very excited to go to work because, you know, like Jim was saying, everyone was so invested. And I guess because it was Luke's departure storyline and people really wanted to show up for that. But also there was just a great camaraderie. It was really fun days, you know, some long, hard days of shooting, but no one complained because it was so great shooting. You know, everyone was really there, really into it.
Awesome.
Jess S. says, was happy about this storyline. Perfect match for Dylan.
So I have a couple more for Rebecca and then a few for the writers. Rebecca, Val Marin would like to know if you would have stood up to your father in the name of love despite the dangerous circumstances that it held.
Hell yeah.
All right. Yeah. And one that came up quite a bit was, how did you prepare yourself as an actress for, you know, such a sad fate as for your as, that your character had?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, the story, we played that story through, we told that story with a nice through line. So, you know, I think Luke had the hard part when I died, you know, so, but it was very, the rest of it was very easy. It was very easy to, I think, play the dynamic between Stanley and Luke, and the love story with Luke was, you know, right there and very easy to do. But I don't know how much prep I did. I feel like it just sort of all the magic happened when we got there. If that makes any sense.
For Larry, you know, another thing we should talk about in this is the performances between Jason and Luke. We have a lot of really beautiful stuff because his best friend, probably off screen as well, is leaving the cast and he's going to stay. What are your thoughts on seeing some of that stuff all these years later?
Well, I was really struck by, of course, because I listened to the words, but, you know, I remember, you know, the writing, you know, with Steve, the look what they did to her. But he goes, Brandon, like he brings Brandon right into that thing. Of course, Brandon's the star of our series, so of course he does. But I was happy at that. But at the same time, I was kind of shocked that it, but it all works. And I mean, look, I mean, the goodbye with the thing with the guys was really emotional that day. I mean, Jim knows he shot it with him. Hey, Jim, was it the last thing you shot of that episode? I wonder now. Was Luke driving off the last?
Remember that? I don't,
probably
I don't,
not.
I don't
probably we're on the set. Probably
not there with him on the motorcycle. I remember it very well, but I don't know if it was the last day. I don't.
Yeah,
know.
It probably was. It would have been on the set. Probably we would have gone back to the set probably. But I mean, you know, there's a real bromance between those guys there. And we had really, you know, played that. We wanted to really focus on that at the end. That's why we contrived this thing where Bruno's going to call the Peach Pit and Brandon's going to take Luke over there. I mean, you know, we had to vertically integrate the story, which is, you know, part of the challenge of writing these things. And it's like a puzzle you're trying to put together.
Even the scene with Brandon and Luke or Dylan at the when they're playing cards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he tells him, you know, he's his best friend and all that stuff. I mean, you guys really sort of pulled on our heartstrings, not even just with, you know, what's going to happen with Tony, but in saying goodbye to that character. He does get an opportunity to say goodbye to everyone, essentially. You know, even
I felt great about that. And I forgot that Rebecca got to smoke cigars, too, at the bachelorette party.
That's right. We did.
And that was kind of cute. Yeah, those guys, I guess, you know, they did their job.
There's that, yes.
Yes, that's right. The only thing that really jarred me in this episode, and I can't remember for the life of me what happened, but we have Ray Pruitt show up in the episode, right? You know, or did I dream that? Does Ray Pruitt show up at the beach house at one point and try to talk to Donna?
He does.
I have no idea. I guess we had him on contract because he was already gone by that point, I think. I thought, I mean.
Yes, Jamie Walters shows up and he's angry.
Walters, character.
Yeah. I can't remember why we needed to have that.
Larry, I think that was one of those shows too that was like 25 minutes over, and you guys had to freeze Brian.
There was more story. There was more story there. That makes sense, Jim. Yeah, I would think so. Steve Wasserman. Actually, you know, I have to read something from Jessica. Actually, might as well do it now.
Yeah.
Let me just because Jessica Klein, who was of course executive producer with Steve, you know, and myself for these episodes. Steve is no longer with us, and Jessica couldn't come tonight, so she wanted me to read this, and I will. This episode was Steve Wasserman's proudest moment. It demonstrates not only his talent as a writer, but also as a producer. And Steve loved working on 90210. He would be so touched and honored to know that the fans are still watching the show so many years later. Our daughter, Shira, joins me in wishing all those who celebrate a happy, healthy, and sweet new year.
Yeah.
Love you, Jess.
Yeah, Jessica normally would be with us, but, you know.
And you know, we all miss Steve, who, you know, again, this was an episode, again, three of the principals in it are gone. I mean, it's shocking.
And Jess says watching Luke ride off at the end is even sadder now. Yeah. So James, yeah. You said that you you remember shooting the drive off, the send off scene. What are your memories of that?
Oh my! It was two guys working. Two guys, you know, the guys were wonderful. They loved each other.
Yeah.
You know, we were out in that great location out in Pasadena, where the house was out there, where Luke's place was.
Altadena, yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Once again, we were losing. You know, I'm just talking technical here. We were using long lenses. So that great shot of him driving away on the bike was just a focus pull that lasted for quite a long time. Big old bitching close up of Luke, and it, you know, they were very simple actors. Those guys, you know, they were less was more with them, but they were both so full, they didn't have to do a lot. There was just, and the audience was so invested in their relationship. You know, the audience was so connected that they were imagining a million different things as well. Those guys were good guys to work with. I loved those guys. They were good guys, you know.
Yeah.
And they were doing their job. They loved it. They honored that moment as actors.
For sure. Rebecca, what about working with Jason for you? You did some stuff with him.
Yeah, he was great. He was a hoot. You know, he was also one of the people who made me feel very comfortable when I first arrived on the show. But, you know, listen, those two, they had a really great friendship on the screen and off the screen. So that was really fun to watch. And it was really endearing and special. And, you know, it was a great set, you know, for me to be on, just to see all that. You know, I'd never been on a show for more than a few episodes. So to see these people who'd worked together for so many years and really had these deep friendships and connections and all this history and had gone through so much together. It was lovely to watch. Jason was great.
Larry, some fan fiction here. If Luke Perry said, I'm going to stay on for the season. Say we get a contract, right?
22 more episodes, 32 episodes for that season.
I'm doing it. What happens with Dylan? Is it still with Tony?
Yes. But then she dies at the 32nd episode. Sorry. But I mean, you know, again, the long game was always going to be Kelly, it was going to be Brenda, frankly, originally. But we were still going to work in the triangle with Brandon and Dylan over Kelly once we lost Brenda for Dylan. But we still were hopeful that Shannon was going to come back. You know, I mean, what we might have done, though, I shouldn't say that. But we would have had to deal with, you know, her father and stuff. I mean, because I think it's really good the way we end this episode. The killing is over, you know, so theoretically that's, you know, neutralized or whatever. And that's done. She would have had to have probably gone out with Brandon, I guess. I mean, you know, probably would have been Brandon and Tony, you know, because again, we vertically integrated our characters. They all wound up being with each other for a lot of times, unfortunately.
So there's no version of this story where they live.
That's just a little group.
There's no version of this story where they live happily ever after.
No, there are no married couples on the show in a show like this, at least in my world, you know, or that, you know, or else you got to challenge them. Well, yeah, they'd marry, but then there'd be an affair. Luke, you know, would have been a, you know, men are very immature. Let's face it, for a long time, men are very immature, as we all know. Jim, back me up here. Cliff.
No comment.
Anyway, so probably Dylan would have just been in a situation. He just, and it would have been bad, and his marriage would have been over. So we would normally do. We put an obstacle in between them, you know, split them up, and then maybe if work them back again.
Bring them back together.
Okay. You know, it's just working the puzzle.
I got you. Well, I think
I'm glad I died.
It was so, well, I mean, it's so memorable. Like you said, it was so impactful. I think you did the whole show. I mean, it's amazing. It was 8 episodes, but it's so precious when you see it now.
I always bring up the point that, you know, for the Brenda Dillon fans, which I am I'm Switzerland, whatever that is. I love all of the couples together. But if Brenda doesn't leave, do we ever see this Tony, you know, Dylan storyline? And I don't, you know, because
probably not. No, that came out of necessity. We knew we had to get rid of him, and we had the leftover storyline with, you know, that we had inherited with the father being killed and who killed his father. We could use that to drive a romantic story.
Yeah. And so, I mean, for me, the Tony and Dylan storyline is probably the most powerful of the storylines that come to 90210. So, I mean,
I know. I mean, season six is a hell of a season. I mean, as we were discovering, but watching a lot of season six, it's pretty amazing. And it was, you know, at the time, you know, everyone said, oh, the show's going down, Luke's leaving, this is happening, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, and again, you can't do a college show. That's what everyone told us. You can't do a college show, which it's interesting. No one's done a college show.
Lily, I'll let you do a couple of more, and then we're going to wrap this one up.
Yep, I have a few more. So actually for Cliff, you've actually been receiving a lot of love from our viewers. I was just taking a look at the comments here, and everyone is so happy to see you. One of the questions that came up was, were you ever recognized or approached by any fans for your character, Bruno?
I still, to this day, am recognized. But oftentimes, people don't quite know how they know me. But for the longest time, I went to the theater once and literally the audience parted ways and they were like, oh my gosh, there's the guy from 90210. I got recognized quite a bit and still do, but nowadays it's more like I know you from somewhere. So I always say I'm an actor and ultimately it comes down to Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah. Dylan.
This one may actually be for Larry and maybe Jim. Chance Bartels asks if the episode One Wedding and a Funeral was inspired by the James Bond 007 movie On Her Majesty's Secret Service. In that 1968 film, 007 married a woman and she was shot up by thugs. He also says that both that movie and 90210 are exactly alike and are each dramatic to the max. The late Stanley Kamel was inspired as Antonio's father. Director James Whitmore's father of the same name was an acclaimed character actor. Any connection?
Not that I know of. I mean, you know, other than I remember seeing that movie, you know, maybe in the back of my head it was there.
Be careful there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, we'll get to
okay, two more.
No, I don't think, I already said we stole from Shakespeare, so now, you know, James Bond, what the heck, you know.
Larry, you mentioned the cat earlier. So what was the story behind the cat trouble? Was it anyone's pet? Did anyone get to take it home?
Well, funny you should ask. I actually, this was a kind of a, you know, like a lot of times we draw on our experiences as people. I was in love with a girl who drove a motorcycle and had a cat in her, what was called then a knapsack. That's how long ago it was. It was a knapsack that she traveled with. And it was St. John's of Annapolis. I was leaving Georgetown School of Foreign Service, and I was following this girl, and she had a cat named Trouble. And it turned out to be Trouble for me because just the relationship did not work out. But I always store it in the back of my head. And you know, again, we were looking for stuff to do for the kids in the house, you know, for once she moved in with Tony moved in with Dylan, and the cat thing just became something, you know. And then again, we realized, oh, we can use it for that great moment to do the switch where Dylan's going to stay, look for the cat, and she's going to be in the car. And so the cat became so useful. And then, you know, we just kind of went with the cat. I mean, I love animals myself, and this cat really, did well because she acts by doing nothing with Luke, who's crying over the cat after the death.
Yes.
When the cat finally comes back in, we knew that was going to be a killer moment, and it just delivered it so beautifully.
Yeah. Rebecca, did you get any, what did you think of the cat? Did you get, someone's asking here if you got to keep the cat, Alex?
No, I did not get to keep the cat, but I was really fond of that little cat. It was a sweet little cat and I loved shooting with it. And again, I also love animals. So that was kind of a treat. It was really fun.
Yes, there we go. Okay, one more, Lily, and we're out of here.
It's a good one. Larry, Val Maron brings up, in Dylan's vows to Tony, he says that all of his life, people told him he was running away from something, but then found her. Sadly, after Tony's death, he's forced to run away again. This time he goes to Brenda. Was this just a coincidence? Of course, the Brillin fan in me always wished it was because he really loved her too, after the telegram she sent him for his wedding. And I'd like to add in there, why couldn't Dylan tell Brenda? He tells Brandon, I don't think I could have told her why.
Oh, God. Here we go. This Brenda's.
Well, okay. So the first one was when we didn't really think about Dylan going to London at that point. When he's driving off to, you know, start a new life. And, you know, just, you know, again, we always imagine Dylan somewhat of a writer. Like he's storing all this stuff up because eventually he's going to write something. So, you know, he's just going out to have some experiences. We brought in the London thing a little bit later. It seemed a way to kind of keep working the Brenda thing with Dylan to have him say, I can't tell her. It's just a great way to show emotion. I mean, so it was a way to show that it was a little bit still something there. And again, to keep those fans like yourself going at this possibility. So, I mean, we knew even without social media, when people would write letters to us, we knew that people watched the show and really were invested in these stuff. So, and that fed us. It fed us because we realized that early on they knew the show sometimes better than us. So we were following them sometimes. We tried to keep everything alive.
Lastly, I'm going to ask Rebecca, do you look back, and I'm going to ask all you guys this. You look back on this episode now recently, 30 years later. What do you think? Does it still hold up? How do you feel about it?
You know what? I think it does. I mean, I really think it does. And I think, 30 years later, I still have people confessing to me, you know, that they watched the show. It was like their dirty little secret. And they know more about the show than I did. You know what I mean? So I think it does hold up. And there's a whole new generation of people watching it. So I think that is the telltale sign of great television.
Yeah. How about you, James? You just watched it back. What do you think?
Do I think it holds up?
Yeah.
I do. I was moved by it, brother. I was kind of that scene in the dress shop. I'm kind of going, what is this stuff? But then it started to flow, started to roll, and it was absolutely very, it was very moving to me. I loved the wedding. I loved you guys together in the house. I loved you guys together, you know, on your wedding night. There was brilliant stuff in the dancing, the songs, and of course the ending. Just when Luke takes that little kitty cat in his hands and started to weep, You can't beat it, brother. Yeah.
How about you, Cliff?
In preparation for this, I was watching my episodes with my son, who's 24, and he had never seen the show. Mm-hmm. And he started watching it, and he was like, I want to watch this show.
Yeah.
So I think it holds up. I watched that final episode. I started weeping. I just thought Luke was just fantastic. And just, you know, my heart broke. So yeah. I think it holds up.
And I think, you know, what we know about losing Luke all these years later, I think it even gives it another piece to the puzzle here. Hey, I'm all about gratitude these days, guys. James, I just want to tell you, thank you so much for directing this episode. I mean, it really drew us in, and we still talk about it, but there's so much beauty in what you did all those years ago on this, and we're just so thankful for it. And Cliff, as Bruno, you were the fans. You were us. We were rooting for this to get stopped and for Tony not to die. So it's just beautiful work that you did all the way through, and we're just so thankful that you came by. And Rebecca, what can I say? I mean, this is the only episode of 90210 I can't watch because I get so emotional, but I think it speaks to your honesty and your what you bring out of the character. You know, it was very easy for all of us to fall in love with Tony, the character. I think it speaks to your work and probably who you are.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. We really appreciate it. Cool, guys. All right, so thank you so much. We will check you next week. Larry, which two episodes are we talking about on Wednesday with Chuck?
We're discussing Meet Mr. Pony.
Right.
And Pig is a Boy is a Dog, which I wrote. It's an animal rights episode. And then we have the I've never seen Meet Mr. Pony, so I'll be watching that for the first time.
So it's so two really big Brenda episodes. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a Brenda-centric show showing her side, both two sides of Brenda. And then the other thing we should, you know, again, this October 4th Super Show, which hopefully Jim Cliff and Rebecca will just give a happy anniversary to, actually. Maybe they should say happy anniversary now, actually, just so we can have it on tape in case we don't get them. But yeah, we're gonna party the 30-year anniversary, and do it just because it's become a pandemic pastime. So we had nothing else to do, but it's been very gratifying. Just to see your faces, it's so wonderful.
And I love it.
Love you all.
Awesome.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.